Well, good morning. All one word here. And this morning, we have come up to Old Sarum, which is on the outskirts of Salisbury, to see the Romans. So, whilst I'm going to be doing a bit of homework for my Roman Wall trek in 2 weeks, it's 2 weeks today that Dean Reed and I go on our Roman Wall trek. But whilst I do a bit of homework on the Romans, I should be asking lots of questions. Also come to take some photographs, because this time every year, English Heritage put on some kind of event. This time last year it was the Vikings, and it's the Romans today. Well, it was yesterday and today. And already we've been up there and decided to come back to the car because it's a little bit nippy up on the top. It's a bit windy.
On the 25th and the 26th, there's a night thing.
The jousting. Yeah, so at the end of the month, there's some jousting and knights and things like that. Jousting is was a sport in the medieval times, and you had two knights, each on a horse, and they'd be opposite ends of a field, and they'd run towards each other with these big long poles that were about 5 meters long, and no, not spears, and they'd try to hit each other off. So yes, they were often injured, and some often died. But that was the sport of the day. It was a sport. Jousting. Yes, let's take Jessica's coat. Okay, so talk to some Romans, get some pictures. So yeah, as I say, we've already been up there. And quite impressive so far from what we've seen. And that's without any... There's a reenactment in a minute, actually, so we need to get back up. My camera?
Yeah.
Mummy's got it. So, we'll get you back in a minute when there's something else to record.
Now, our next event here in the arena will be starting in approximately 10 minutes' time at 12 o'clock.
10?
And you will have the opportunity... Nay, the privilege of seeing soldiers from the 20th Roman Legion, from the time of the Emperor Vespasian, who ruled the Roman Empire between 69 and 79 AD.
He's got a Roman watch as well.
He was the one that came after Nero, and Nero came after Claudius. And it was the Emperor Claudius in the year 43 AD who invaded the Isles of Britannia. So you're going to see some Roman legionaries
and
some Roman auxilia from the 20th Legion as they would have appeared on these islands in around the year 70 AD as they fought against the Brigantae, ancient Britons, who were defending themselves in the northern part of the Isles of Britannia. And that's taking place here in around 10 minutes time at 12 o'clock. But please let me remind you that the Roman encampment is open, and
joking.
You're more than welcome to go and talk to the Roman soldiers. And also we have various other things going on here today. We have a Roman cookery display. That will be at 1 o'clock. We are going to have a children's gladiatorial combat. That will be at 2 o'clock this afternoon in the Inner Bailey. But our first event will be starting here shortly in around, 9 or 10 minutes' time at 12 o'clock. If I can just remind you, ladies and gentlemen.
Two minutes.
Please do not cross the double rope barrier for any reason whatsoever, unless you're instructed to do so by a member of English Heritage staff or one of the reenactors. Reenactments can be dangerous, and the double rope barrier is here for your protection. So please do not cross the double rope barrier for any reason whatsoever, unless instructed to do so. Old Sarum, long before it was a Norman castle, was an ancient British hill fort. Now, who were the ancient Britons? Well, they were the Celtic people that lived in these islands long before the Romans arrived. In the south, many of the tribes were known as the Belgae. They came over from Gaul, from the continent. In the north, they were known as the Brigante. And then further north of that, they were called the Picts, the Gaels, and the Caledonians. But they were the enemies of Rome. And you now see the power of Rome marching before you. Ladies and gentlemen, will you please give a round of applause for the 20th Legion of the Imperial Roman Army! In the year 43 AD, the Emperor Claudius decided to invade the Isles of Britannia. Rome at that time was the greatest power on earth, certainly the greatest power in Europe and in the west of Asia. The Roman Empire stretched from what is modern Portugal in the west to Syria in the east, from the North African desert to the northern shores of Gaul, modern France. But these islands, the Isles of Britannia, they were the next target for the Roman army. So, let us have a look at these Roman soldiers. These are how soldiers would have appeared in the second half of the first century AD, from around the time of the invasion in 43 AD up at least till the end of the reign of the Emperor Vespasian in the year 79 AD. These are Roman legionaries. Now, a Roman legionary was a citizen of Rome. He could not be a slave, he could not be a foreigner, he could not be a woman. In fact, he had to have all his genitalia, which means eunuchs need not apply. But we're not going to prove that to you today, ladies and gentlemen. These are the Roman legionaries, Roman citizen soldiers. Let's have a look at their armour, their equipment and their weapons. First of all, most importantly, on their feet, they are wearing a very stout pair of sandals. Hobnailed on the bottom, so they do not slip on the earth. And it is these sandals that they wear that march them all the way round the Roman Empire. Absolutely crucial. These soldiers are not warriors. They are professionals. They are paid. They join the army for 25 years' service. If they are married when they join the army, that is an automatic divorce. You're not allowed to be married and be a Roman soldier. Let's have a look at their defensive armour. Fighting against the Celts favoured using a long sword that they used to literally slash with. So protection to the head is absolutely crucial. And you can see our Roman soldiers wearing a great helm upon their head with cheek pieces and a back piece as well to protect the upper body from the slashing of the Celtic warriors. But you'll also notice very cleverly that the ears are exposed with a flap behind the ears as well to act as like a sound trumpet. This is so the soldiers can easily hear what's going on, hear the calls of the cornica, the trumpet, and also their officers. So that is the helm upon the head. They also wear around their bodies the lorica segmentata, the plate armour that goes around the body, the upper body and the shoulders, again to defend themselves against those slashing swords of the Celts.
I win, because I got 40.
Their offensive, or their other defensive weapon is the scutum, the shield. Now this is made of wood and linen, but it is extremely strong and hard. It is good for defence, but it is also, it could be an offensive weapon. The pommel, you can punch somebody in the face, and you can also knock them down with the shield as well. So these are the defensive weapons. Let's have a look at the offensive weapons. The pilum. This is a javelin, but it's no ordinary javelin. If you note, the front part of the javelin is very thin indeed. The idea being that it will pierce your enemy's shield, and if it does not kill your enemy, it will then bend in the shield and he will not be able to pull it out of the shield. This will then render his shield useless. So he must drop his shield. He's not wearing armour, mainly, because the Celts usually fought bare-chested, apart from the richer ones. He's not wearing armour, so then he is now very vulnerable to the Roman soldier's gladius. Now, unlike the Celtic sword, this is not a slashing weapon, this is a thrusting weapon. The Romans are fighting shoulder to shoulder, so all you can see is their shield and their helmets, and sticking out between those shields are these gladiuses, which then they're literally sticking into the guts of the Celts as they come against them. And if a Roman soldier should lose his gladius or get it damaged, he has his pugio, which is a dagger which can be used for dispatching an enemy opponent at very close quarters.
So they could get close.
Again, an important part of the Roman soldier's equipment. So ladies and gentlemen, please give a round of applause for our legionaries. Now, the legionaries considered themselves to be the core of the Roman army. The Romans fought on foot. The Roman legionaries did not fight mounted. But there were other parts of the Roman army just as important. And these are the auxilia. Now, forget the modern word auxiliary, which means secondary. But in Latin, auxilia means assistant or helper of. And this is exactly what the auxilia were. Now, these are not Roman citizens. They are recruited from the tribes that the Romans have fought against and defeated. And they're often recruited from the tribes that the Romans have great respect for. Now, these auxilia are Belgae. They are from the north of Europe, from what is modern day Belgium. But they were thought to be very hard soldiers, and the Romans were most impressed with them, so they recruited them as auxilia into the 20th Legion. So let's have a look at our auxilia Belgae infantry. Like their legionary colleagues, they have a stout helm upon their head to defend themselves from the slashing blows of the Celtic warriors. But they don't have a pilum, they have a hasta. Now the hasta is a stabbing spear. It's not a javelin that you throw. It is literally for stabbing and thrusting in close combat. They also have a gladius as well, a sword. And their defensive arm around their body is not the lorica segmentata that the legionaries wear, but they wear a mail shirt, which can be just as effective and in some ways can even be better because it's more flexible. I'm sure the legionaries would disagree with that. So ladies, and again, the auxilia, they serve for 25 years with the army. And they get paid, they're professional soldiers, but one of the benefits that they gain on the end of their service is when they leave the army, they become Roman citizens, and so do their families. So they then can live in Rome and they can trade as a Roman citizen and have all the rights of Pax Romana. Ladies and gentlemen, our auxilia. Now, if you look at any map of Great Britain. You'll see every now and again there's a straight road. And sometimes on the map it'll even refer to it as a Roman road. And one of the great things that the Roman army did was build roads so that they could march quickly and efficiently from any part of the Roman Empire to any other part where they may be needed, they may be required. The Roman army was a marching army. And this is what we can see here. Roman soldiers on the march, on campaign. Their shields are covered with a leather cover to protect them from the elements. And you can see all their equipment they're literally carrying on their backs. But they are still wearing their lorica segmentata, their armour, because at any time they may be attacked or ambushed. Outside the empire by enemy tribesmen, or possibly inside the empire by brigands or bandits. So ladies and gentlemen, please show your appreciation for the marching Roman legionaries. We can also see a legionary at the front there wearing a mail shirt, not the lorica segmentata. Not all Roman soldiers look the same. They used the equipment that they had available. Sometimes it was passed down from father to son. We now have a very important part of our Roman legion. We have the signifer. Now, the Roman legion was broken down into cohorts, and then each cohort was broken down into centuries. Each century had a signifer. Now, actually, a century had 80 men. It used to have 100, but by the time of the invasion of Britain, it had been reduced to 80. Signifer, he wears scale armour, very fine, and on his helm, he wears an animal skin to show that he is an officer. So, ladies and gentlemen, please show your appreciation for our signifer. And next, we have the cornicum, or the cornicum. He is a very important part of the Roman infantry, the Roman army, because he gives the officers commands via his great horn. Giving the call, which means reform on the signifer, reform on your standard. Very important. In a battle, it was hard to hear, so you needed an instrument. There were no drums, so the cornicum was absolutely essential. And next we have the vexillarium. Vexillarium is carrying the standard of the 20th Legion. So this is the standard for the whole legion, about 3,000 to 5,000 men, depending on how many cohorts. And again, you can see on his helm, he has an animal skin, again, to show that he is an officer of importance. Ladies and gentlemen, show your appreciation for the standard of the 20th Legion.
Bearskin, yeah.
And then last in our officers, but certainly by no means least, we have our centurion, the man in command of this century. On his helmet, you can see that the comb he wears goes from side to side, not back to front as it would do on the optio or on lower ranking officers. And this is to show that he is a centurion, and on the battlefield, you can clearly see who he is and where he is. He's wearing greaves on his lower legs. These go back to the days of the Greek hoplites, but they are protection for the lower legs, but also they are a badge of rank. He wears phalaroles on his front, which are medals. These show the campaigns that he has fought, and it also shows that he is a brave and experienced soldier. He has a gladius and a pugio, but his main weapon is the vine stick. Now, this is not for fighting the enemy with, oh no. This is for keeping tight discipline within the century. A centurion would use that vine stick to administer corporal punishment to any soldier that was not paying attention to commands. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a large round of applause for our centurion.
very impressive regalia, costumes.
So unlike the Celts or the Germanic warriors, these are professional soldiers. They do nothing else but soldier. They do not farm, they do not trade. They are well paid and they spend their time training for war when they're not on campaign. Every day, except Roman holidays, these soldiers would train, as you see here. They trained with wooden weapons that were often heavier than the actual weapons that they'd be fighting with, the gladius, the pilum. They would be training close order drill, square bashing as we know it today. Both the legionaries and also the auxilia would train every day. This is so that when war began, when they went on campaign, they were fine-honed, they were disciplined, and they knew what they were doing. And we can see that the centurion there is marching around the training ground, keeping a stern eye on all of the soldiers. And any one of them that steps out of line will be quick to suffer his wrath with that vine stick. And again, we can see both the auxilia training and the legionaries. And the officers aren't sitting somewhere else drinking wine or enjoying themselves. It is important that they witness the training of their soldiers and they pass comment on what they see, and that they are there when the cornican sounds so that the sentry can reform on the signifer.
Tiring. Heavy kit though, isn't it?
And furthest away from us on the far side, we can see Roman soldiers going through close order drill. Again, this is something that the Celts did not do. The Celts fought as a war band. They literally psyched themselves up and then they charged hell for leather at their enemy. They did not drill. They did not march in step. The Romans did. The Romans took this from the ancient Greeks, especially from the Spartans, who were some of the very first soldiers to march in step. And what marching in step gives you is manoeuvrability. You can move a body of men about and it does not lose its formation. This is absolutely crucial on the battlefield.
Cool.
And now again we can see practicing with the pilum. Pilum again having two purposes: to try and kill your enemy, but if it doesn't kill him, to render his shield useless. You can see the auxilia there in the centre with their haster, their thrusting spear. The auxilia would also provide bowmen and cavalry as well. There weren't many Roman cavalry, they were quite rare, but each legion between 3,000 and 5,000 men may have a cohort about 480 cavalry. The cavalry's purpose was to go out and find the enemy, to act as the eyes and ears of the army. Now the cornican, on the centurion's order, blows on his horn. The signifer and the vexillarium take up station, and the soldiers immediately know that they must reform on the signifer. No orders are shouted. There's no need for any shouting. They know what to do when they hear that call from the cornicum. And they reform themselves, each man knowing his place in the rank and the file. And in Latin, the centurion barks out an order. So the Romans seamlessly go from line into column of march. Pilum's lifted from the ground, and off they march. The Romans did not have drums. So to keep the pace, one of the soldiers shouts out, "Sen, sen, sen dex," which literally means left, right, left, right. Again, to keep all of the soldiers in time with each other and all in step. And this is so that the soldiers can maneuver, they can wheel to the left or to the right, they can keep formation. Now the order has been given to change formation from column into line, as they would on the battlefield. Usually on the battlefield, there would be 4 to 5 lines, one behind each other, to give the body some depth. But the Romans could fight in single line if they chose to do so. And also you'll see that the auxilia are on both flanks, to protect the flanks or to be sent out to the front to scout out the enemy, possibly to skirmish, or even to attack as heavy infantry. Often the auxilia could win the battle without the legionaries needing to do a thing. Coming forward with their hastas. They're just as well drilled as their legionary colleagues. So you've seen our auxilia. Give our auxilia a round of applause, please, ladies and gentlemen. So imagine that the legionaries have hurled their pilum. They've now drawn the gladius. All you can see is that shield, the helmet, and those razor-sharp gladiuses heading straight for you.
Here they come.
Every man in step, the line is well dressed, straight. The Gauls, the ancient Britons, the Germans could not do this. If their charge failed, then they had nothing left. And we can see that the auxilia are now protecting the rear of the legionaries, the auxilia being absolutely crucial to everything that the legionaries do. Gladius is now replaced in the scabbard. Now, in a siege, if the Romans wanted to approach the walls of the enemy's stronghold, the city, they would use a formation known as the tortoise, where they're literally interlocking their shields with each other, each man protecting himself and his neighbour. And they would form a virtually impregnable shield from both the front and above. Then they could advance on the enemy stronghold. But again, this needed strict discipline. Every man must keep in step. Every man's step must be regulated so he does not get out of line with his comrades. This is also very maneuverable. They can turn to the left or the right as is required. Each man listening out for the orders. And this is how the Romans would assault an enemy stronghold. And it was extremely effective. Again, we can see the auxilia protecting the flanks. And you can see each man stepping very carefully. Again, the enemies of Rome could not do this. Ladies and gentlemen, give a big round of applause. for our tortoise. It was this training that did give the Romans the advantage. Their discipline, the soldiers knew exactly what they were doing. If one thing didn't work, the officers had another idea, another tactic available to them, unlike their enemies. Now again, we can see the century. Bit more close order drill. And now they're performing a manoeuvre known as the wedge. Now this was used against the ancient Britons, against Queen Boudica, Queen Boadicea. A legion would have many wedges, maybe 10 or 15 all in a line. The centurion would be at the front, his greaves protecting his lower legs, and they would advance on the enemy with their gladiuses drawn. The enemy would be forced into the gaps between the wedges and they would be cut down by the gladius.
Ladies and gentlemen, they appear to have damaged my PA. But luckily for you, we have the English Heritage green tape.
If the ancient Britons had had the English Heritage green tape, perhaps the Romans wouldn't have won. Ladies and gentlemen, please give a huge round of applause for our legionaries and our auxilia of the 20th Legion of the Imperial Roman Army. Again, the gladius replaced in the scabbard. And the vine stick being there used by the centurion. All orders given in Latin throughout the entire army, regardless of the language spoken by the auxilia, they would all have to learn Latin. So the Romans invaded Britain beginning in 43 AD. They won many battles in the open field, but they had to take the hill forts, the hill fort like the very one that you're sitting on now. So how did the Romans achieve that? Well, to achieve that, they used artillery. Now we, in modern day times, think of artillery as something using gunpowder or cordite or explosives. Well, obviously the Romans didn't have these things, but they did have artillery. But the artillery used the power of the torsion of rope, the twisting of rope, to hurl great rocks and darts at the enemy. The Romans didn't invent ancient artillery. That was done by the Greeks. But they perfected it, and they used it to devastating effect. Nearest to me, we have the onager, then we have the catapultae, and then we have the ballista. Let's see what they can do, ladies and gentlemen. We're just making sure there's nobody down the far end. We can see several Roman legionaries. The centurion now just giving some orders about aiming the ballista and the onager.
Hurry.
The onager is ready to shoot. Let's see what it can do, ladies and gentlemen.
Where's the onager? Whoa! Whoa. My reaction's
I think that deserves a round of applause.
That is impressive. What if, did you see the ball that it fired?
And the ballista there, look at that! And let's see what the catapult I can do.
I want to go on the catapult next.
Oh. Wowee.
So, at the far end we have the ballista shooting a stone ball. Then we have the catapult eye. And then we have, nearest to me, the Onager. Well, we also have some Roman archers. The Auxilia provided archers using composite bows. And let's see what they can do with the bow and the arrow.
Oh, brilliant.
And again, that's straight into the target there, representing an ancient British war band, ready to charge at the Romans.
Oh, they're going to do another one.
And again, the Onager is ready to shoot. Let's see what it can do.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's so good.
All achieved by twisted rope. I think that is absolutely superb. The Romans would take the Onager on campaign. They would break it down and it would be carried on mules or on carts. And then it would be reassembled at a siege. The ballista now is ready again to shoot. Let's see what that can do. Oh. I think that one might have been leg before wicket, actually, but... And again, the archers ready with their composite bows. The legionaries did not use bows and arrows, but the auxilia did. Again, you can see the weapons being prepared. The Onager. Now, in Latin, the word Onager means kicking ass because of the kick that this machine has. Sometimes the catapulta was known as the scorpion because of the sting that it had in its tail. The Romans built these weapons, the Roman legionaries maintained them, and they were experts in using them.
Whoa, wow.
I think that deserves a round of applause again. And now the ballista.
Oh, nice one.
I beg your pardon, that was the catapult eye, the ballista. And now the archers.
Yeah.
So there wouldn't be much left. There wouldn't be much left of that ancient British war band if they tried to charge the Romans. Also, the siege machines, the siege engines would be used to batter down the walls and the gates of the hill forts so that the Romans could then assault using their legionaries and their auxilia, capturing Old Sarum, capturing Maiden Castle. Now, at Maiden Castle, the body was found of an ancient British warrior with a bolt from one of the catapulti embedded in his spine. But it wasn't embedded in the back of his spine, it was actually in the front of his spine. So it had gone right through the body and almost out the other side. So it shows how deadly these weapons were. And again, the Onager is prepared, ready to shoot. Now, believe it or not, this is a small Onager. This is about the smallest type that the Romans used. They made much larger ones for larger sieges, in some cases almost 10 times bigger than this one. So you can imagine the rock that that would hurl and the distance that it would throw it. We're now going to shoot the ballista as we would a modern howitzer at a high trajectory shot. So let's see what that can do. Just waiting for the command. Now that would be used on a battlefield if you had your own soldiers in front and you wanted to shoot over them at your opponents before they charged. Both the catapulti and the ballista could be used on the battlefield as well as during a siege because they were mobile weapons.
Oh, here comes Centurion. Oh, maybe not.
The Romans landed in 43 AD. Some of the British tribes welcomed them as allies, but many fought hard against them. There were battles up at Medway and on the Thames. But slowly, the Romans advanced. They defeated many of the Belgae tribes, and then they marched north against the Brigante. And by the year about 80 AD, about 35 years later, most of the southern parts of the Isles of Britannia were firmly parts of the Roman Empire. The Romans then went north to fight the Picts, the Gaels, the Caledonians, but they could not subdue the very north of Britannia. So eventually the Emperor Hadrian, in fact after the Emperor Antonine, built a wall across the north of the Roman Empire up in what is now near the border between modern England and modern Scotland. So, ladies and gentlemen, you are very, very privileged to hear the voice of our centurion.
The Antonine,
I wouldn't quite agree with that.
Antonine Wall was further north in Scotland.
Ladies and gentlemen, the men have now assembled to salute the standards. The standards, obviously, were very important to the men. They were regarded as sacred objects. And then, of course, we should go up to our camp, come and talk to us up on the camp. Also, there's some Roman cooking going on up there. And ladies in particular, grab yourself a Roman soldier and examine his armour and equipment.
Oh.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
And so, ladies and gentlemen, once again, will you please show your appreciation for our Imperial Roman soldiers of the 20th Legion, the Ermine Street Guard! And you are most welcome to follow the Roman soldiers up to their encampment. They'd be more than happy to talk to you, explain about what life was like in the Roman army in the second half of the first century AD. Perhaps they'll let you try on a helmet or pick up a shield.
Okay, we're back. Due to an ill child, little Harry, he's got a cold. We're having to cut short early because he's just getting whingy and he's just, well, you know how ill kids are. But I think the most interesting story of the day came when we were striking Roman coins and the fella running the stand says the worst job in Rome was, well, let me tell you the background. The slaves used to make the Roman coins. And when it came to them making the more prestigious coins, the silver coins, they used to file off and chip off little bits of silver from the coins and they used to eat it, swallow it. And then like that night or the next morning when they went to the toilet, they used to poke around in their fecal matter for the silver bits that were left over and go and wash them and spend them. And there was a Roman hired to come and check the fecal matter to make sure the slaves weren't eating the silver. And if they were found to be eating silver, well, they'd obviously be punished or executed. So that's that. So, okay, it's a bright day, overcast, extremely windy.
Not here,
but it's extremely windy up on the top. And it's you know, the fact of the matter is the sun is really hot, but with the wind is really cold. And so you kind of get, you can't get a happy medium. And so I'm wearing my Gore-Tex jacket and that uncomfortable heat from the sun. Can't win today, absolutely cannot win. But Harry, full of cold, thanks to horrible ill children at school. So we're having to dust them up with Cal Poll and go home. A bit early, never mind. Okay, thanks for listening.